From the Roots Up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. And with me is Phil Conlon of Classical Underground, Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. And how you doing, Phil?
Yes, good afternoon, Phil.
Let's open our veins and talk about Gaza. There is news. Well, there's many things we want to say about this. First of all, I want to say that I think it's wonderful that the expression of calls for humanity coming from almost every place in the world, and it's humanity speaking up for humanity against the wiles of politicians and explainers and talking heads, people actually seeing human suffering, seeing no reason that it should happen, that a super-armed, powerful state with planes, missiles, and nuclear weapons is bombing an area called Gaza, where there is no air defense and where the people are packed in. And this is occupied territory. It's the political responsibility of Israel, which built the fence around the 2.5 million people. But around the world, people are not blind. They're calling out. And I really want to also congratulate Democracy Now! For its coverage of the, particularly the demonstration in New York, led by various Jewish organizations in which hundreds were arrested at Grand Central Station. Were you aware of that, Phil?
And yes, I was following it closely.
I mean, I got to say, we all have our little differences with one another, but boy, Democracy Now! Did an excellent job of covering that and just pointing out this is ultimately in everybody's hands. It isn't, and it should not be allowed to be a sectarian religious issue or try to boil it down to ethnicities. This is a political problem. It's been sitting there smoking. The violence has actually been basically constant between the parties, if we're speaking of Israel, since the beginning. In the region, there's been no shortage of fighting. But most of the fighting in the region was against colonialism. That is, the Egyptians resisting the British and the Algerians resisting the French, the Iraqis, the Syrians had to fight for whatever degree of independence they achieved. I would say it's never quite over, because I repeat this: President of Syria said once that the day the French left Syria was the day they planned on coming back, began to make material plans. But these demonstrations, and here in Toronto, the students are so far ahead of everybody and so courageous, because the editorials and the lecturing and the finger-pointing by people like Doug Ford or the Prime Minister of Canada, various politicians who think they're going to see an opportunity to advance their little careers, trying to intimidate young people who are acting in accordance with ethics, proper ethics and morals, I would say. What they're calling for is a ceasefire and a durable one. I like very much, and Phil, you'd know about this, I think there was a resolution passed on, was it Friday, Saturday? I know they were debating, but a resolution calling for the wording sometimes is it's a truce, ceasefire, but an opportunity, an ending of the bombing so as to provide an opportunity both for political resolution but also in order to save those civilians. And they are civilians in Gaza. I know that I've seen it online. I'm not, and that there are television stations in Israel that have been keeping count of the deaths. I know that Biden says he doesn't trust if numbers coming from Gaza because that's Hamas, he says. Hamas, pardon me, Hamas. So, but the Israeli televisions, one of their stations is reporting the numbers as higher than those coming from Gaza, and the but behind the number they put the word terrorists. So they say 7,000 some terrorists have been killed, which tells you why people need to calm everyone down. So anyway, the vote. Do you know? Can you talk about that at all? You know the numbers in the vote and such.
So I'm sorry, we're talking about the
vote at the United Nations.
The United Nations, right?
General Assembly.
Well, yeah, the number was roughly 145 of the. Remember, every country in the UN belongs to the General Assembly, and there was maybe no, it was 114. There were 45 abstentions, and of course, a lot of the ones who abstained were being subjected to pressure, and there were 12 votes against the resolution. Six of the 12 were countries that are basically small islands that are completely dominated by the United
States. Right?
Micronesia is one of them, you know, the Marshall Islands, you know. Yes. So they're
that's the U.S. Marines in Marshall Islands.
That's right, yeah. You know, so there was even countries, even France voted for it, which is interesting. Because they were there on the Security Council,
yes,
and of course they're just another vote in the General Assembly. But there were no votes, mostly from members of the no votes mostly were from members of NATO, yeah. But some members of NATO abstained as well. So there was no unanimity there,
even in NATO.
Yeah,
yeah. No, it is shaping up as this. Indicates again with something we talk about on the show. This is a power game run by the United States trying to hold on to its hegemony. And therefore, it voted no because they want to define the issues in according to Washington. And this is either the rise of a second, third U.S. Hegemonic movement where they're going to come back into the region in force and with people. As they love to say, since about 1970, boots on the ground. They have warships, two aircraft carriers, many destroyers, etc. Whether or not it's a bluff, I don't know, but the logic of their approach to this issue means it's not solvable without mayhem, a lot of mayhem, because the principal forces that could bring peace and make it work are, frankly, Russia and the United States. Russia has longtime relations with Israel. Russia and the United States were two of the principal powers of the World War II, which formed the United Nations, which also, by the way, established Israel. Russia and the United States were the main powers of the day. Now, the U.S. method is to operate alone and to actually prohibit the involvement of the other power. You know, Phil, there's something we do miss from the Cold War. Is it things would be resolved between them. They would have meetings, and they would say, okay, we'll stop this, because the two of them decided to stop it. When France and Britain and Israel attacked Egypt to take the Suez Canal, because Egypt had declared its sovereignty and authority over the Suez Canal. The President of the United States phoned Russia and UK, but UK was, of course, committed to going to try to take the Suez Canal. And President of the United States told Sir Anthony Eden, stop. And he stopped. He told the Israelis, stop. And they stopped, because it was agreed between Russia and the U.S. that they were not going to, that the Suez Canal did belong to Egypt. That's what they agreed to. And everybody else had to salute and go along. But you see, now we have this dangerous situation where the U.S. is jealous of its power and doesn't want to go back to a world in which it actually has to meet with, compromise with, and talk to anyone else. So, for example, today's Globe and Mail tells you that the perhaps NATO or Western forces should intervene. In other words, okay, you don't want to be under Israeli occupation, so we will occupy you. That's the solution. That's actually what the Globe and Mail says they're talking about. Well, of course, that's a formula for a much wider war, in which I want to remind everybody, if you're thinking in military terms, and a lot of people, that's how they do think, your chances of winning are rather slim. You don't know that because you've been watching too many movies with, you know, where America wins all the wars. They do that in the movies. They're not really that good when they do the real thing. I had a drill instructor tell that to my face and to everybody else in the platoon. He said, they probably told you we won the war in Korea. Let me tell you something. They kicked our ass. That's what he said. And he says, the reason I'm telling you that is because I don't like to have my ass kicked. And so therefore, you better listen up. So, you see, we had to, because you're the players, you know, they tell you, you better shape up, because these other guys know what they're doing. But here, we have this idea that, oh, Biden can lift his baton, and he can solve a problem, or he can send a warship. His warships are now within range of three or four powers that have the wherewithal to put them on the bottom of the Mediterranean. I think he knows that. I hope somebody is whispering in his ear that that's the case. If you're wondering, this is the Taylor Report, CIUT. Again, I want to celebrate the fact that we are seeing tremendous demonstrations, that really big ones. These are serious. These are the people, as they say. This is not one group or another group. This is people. And unprecedented. There was one in Montreal of 25,000 on Saturday. 25,000 people turned out, and they were. And we're going to go into this with you later, Phil, about unions and their involvement. But the head of one of the major unions, and we'll look it up shortly. But it was either the CSN or the main. What's the second?
The QFL.
The QFL or the CSN. Who spoke to them. So that is not done here. We have unionists turning up. We have see some union flags. The students are getting, no, they're walking out. We should be saying that workers should walk out. I would say, you know, we have a very celebrated leader of CUPE, Fred Hahn. We have had Sid Ryan was once the president of the OFL and also a CUPE leader. These leaders are quite brave and well spoken, and they understand the issues, But now I think it's time to, with all the resolutions coming through, to begin to talk about workers leaving the jobs over this issue. It's a war and peace issue. It's a major matter. It is a chance to protest loss of life and to try to bring the warmongers on side, to teach them that the people will resist. So let's everybody put it in their little notebooks. Let's go from resolutions to action. Maybe they could start by urging all union members to attend every rally. That would be a good way to start. They should take their position of their union, stand at the gates at the wherever people are entering, and say, "Come out on Saturday," and say, "Stop the bombing, ceasefire, provide food, water, and medicine to the people of Gaza," which, according to the commander of the Israeli army, they are not to have food, water, and power. That's his position. Canada still talks to this character. We should break off relations with them. If they're going to say people of Gaza can't have food and water, then we say, you're going to become a pariah. We're going to, you know, you and your military, all you get a lot of it from the United States. And Canada speaks to the United States. And sometimes the United States talks back to us. We get the message. But there's no reason we should have any association. If that's the posture of the government of Israel, we shouldn't have anything to do with them. Because otherwise, well, we believe you can say that. You can't have food, water, and medicine. You can't. Because it's going to be a medieval siege. So, you know, yes, we should try to get everybody out and fight back. There's all my little slogans. This is Taylor Report. I believe I've been promised that we might have some music, and should be coming up right now. Back. It is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, and Phil Conlon is here, and of course, as a union man, is not just an authority on classical music. Well, you had a comment.
Well, yes, and Tony pointed out that the UAW has made a strategic goal to organize all of those auto companies that are not organized. And you know, in Canada, we have some very large auto manufacturing companies, Honda, Toyota, and there's more. So Unifor hasn't made an effort. They made a half-hearted effort at Honda about 45 years ago. And they've been silent ever since on these things. And I'm just wondering, will Unifor take up that challenge?
Yeah, they have to. Phil, you remember the old union language. You know, wherever you have unorganized workers, there's a threat to the union.
Of course.
Everybody's got to, you know, you've got to win everybody over to the concept. Where guys would walk to a job and they say, "Hey, I don't see a union here. I'm out of here." You know, I go. But when you have, you know, particularly auto, it's almost 50-50 in terms of the workforce itself. So this is the Taylor Report, CIUT. I want to make an announcement that CUPE 4207 is sponsoring. These are teaching assistants at Brock. And understanding, it's titled, Understanding the War in Ukraine, Canada's role and the need for peace. That's right, there's a war in Ukraine, I forgot. Okay, and it's this Thursday, November the 2nd, at 8, is that a 6 or an 8? Well, okay, neither one of us can tell.
It's at 6 p.m.
6 p.m. 6 p.m.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. 6 p.m. at Brock University, and it will feature Tamara Lorenz, Professor Kevin McKay and of Mohawk College, and Jason Briggs. To register, please go to the Facebook page of QP420707. And this is, as I said, the Taylor Report, CIUT. On the matter, there was something dramatic today, Phil. I don't know if you saw it, but three women have appeared on, now you can find it on Sky News, elsewhere, three hostages are being held by Hamas. They spoke for, well, they had one of them spoke, the other two were there. And they were calling on the government of Israel, but specifically for Benjamin Netanyahu to do something. And they said, what you're presently, you're going to get us killed. I mean, the problem. And they said, so we want you to take action. You did not, they said that, she said, Benjamin Netanyahu had failed them in that they were not secure and they didn't come to help and they ended up where they are. Now their families are also beginning to speak up, and one of them, I noticed, speaking, I think he was in Tel Aviv, he said he directed his appeal to Joe Biden, which I think he has figured that out, called Joe Biden. And I think it's, I don't understand, this thing has not been properly addressed in my view. There should be the idea of trading prisoners is as old as warfare. So Benjamin Netanyahu tells us that he's at war. Well, in wars, actually, people are traded. Civilians are traded, soldiers are traded, officers. It's a history of warfare.
If I can comment on that, Phil, throughout this entire military action between Russia and Ukraine, there are regular exchanges of prisoners. They happen every month, right? And
that's true.
Hundreds of people are involved.
And yes, and you can't make, well, and let's get down to the facts, which is, again, this is known by the people broadly in the world, but it is particularly known in the Arab world that there are 6,000, more than 6,000 prisoners in Israeli jails who, in the view of the Palestinians, should not be there. There's more than 1,000 who have never been charged with anything, charged with nothing, and they're there. So it should be a matter of human, humanitarian attitude or assumption. Let's save these people. Trade them. They're not soldiers. Maybe some of them are. That if you want to make them in a different bracket, then do. But the civilians ought to just be traded. Get it over with. And let's stop all this silliness about, oh, we don't do these things. Israel and the Palestinians, Israel and other Arab states have traded in the past. So it should be addressed as something, yes, you do it. You make a trade. They've been there for 23 days in a horrible situation in the case of the those more than 200 being held by Hamas. And the others have been, if you're talking on the Arab side of it, the Palestinian, they've been, some of them been a third of their lives, and others have been, and some, by the way, are children. There's also some children. So let's just tell the leaders, Canada should speak up on this. Don't just say, Hamas has to release. That's insane. We're trying to actually be practical and solve a problem. But if you want to turn it into a speech, you really ought not to be around in this thing. And I remind everybody, listeners, that Benjamin Netanyahu and Joe Biden, and because of their unipolar approach to the world, and they're the masters in all this, and they just give orders, and that they say, well, you know, Iran is a, Hamas is a Iranian proxy. Well, how come they have their chief spokesperson and the guy doing the trading in Qatar, which has relations with Israel? And it was, as the former Israeli Prime Minister Omer pointed out, money from Qatar went directly to Hamas, and Israel approved of it. He said this was a known fact. So, okay, you have relations with Qatar. Qatar has a U.S. Military base, as we pointed out on the show previous. And that is where the talk is actually going on. But it ought to be approved by people living in Toronto, New York, Washington, Paris. Speak of it openly. There are prisoners on either side, so trade them and save their lives. Because if you're going to have a, what they call a, you know, massive move against Gaza, and you already have massive bombing, the Al-Quds hospital says they've been warned to evacuate. That sort of thing going on, then there will be death amongst, already is death amongst the innocent Gazans, but there will be deaths, I'm afraid, for those people being held hostage. But there seems to be this blood-curdling idea that, oh, we, you know, we don't talk and we're going to just finish these people off. It's all absurd and extremely dangerous. Therefore, I would argue strongly that, and Canada should speak up on this subject. There's nothing shameful about trading prisoners. Trade them. These are, look at Sky News or wherever you want to find it, the three women. Listen to the woman doing the talking. It is embarrassing that Netanyahu comes and says, oh, it's cruel that they did that. Put them. Well, the families actually didn't think it was cruel. They were glad to see their loved ones. Would, by the way, if he wouldn't mind, I'd like him to take a camera, go into the prisons where the Palestinians are being held, and, you know, do something cruel, like letting them talk to their families. Would you do that? I mean, you're supposed to be rough and tough, Netanyahu. Could you allow a Palestinian to talk to his family? Probably not. Irritating things, that, and Phil, this is almost your department, religion here. Netanyahu quoted, I don't know if you know this or saw it, he quoted from the Bible, he said, our holy book, in his speech. You probably saw it.
Yes, the book of Samuel.
Book of Samuel. And here's what he said. This is Netanyahu. You must remember what Amalek has done to you, says our holy Bible. Okay, here's what it says. Now go and smite Amalek and utterly destroy all they have and spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass. That's what it says in 1 Samuel 15:3. That's one of the reasons my mother said that the Bible to her was one of the dirtiest books she'd ever read. But this, that kind of, that's so provocative, and to invoke a religion and the most hateful stuff. I usually stay away from suggesting people out of their minds, literally, but this is pretty scary stuff. Of course, we talked on the show about he used the expression that it was going to be a mighty vengeance, he said. So when he said that, that was 3 weeks ago, and there has been, more than 7,000 people in Gaza, half of them children, more than half children. He said there'll be a mighty vengeance. Well, the book of Deuteronomy says, vengeance is mine, that's, says the Lord, not yours. So you don't, it's a caution about against acting in a state of wrath. But he's actually saying it. I looked up Deuteronomy, it's 35, 32, I believe, and it doesn't mention Netanyahu in Deuteronomy. He's not in there.
You're not working with the right translation.
Pardon me?
You're not working with the right version.
It's a new revised.
Yeah, a new revised, the Netanyahu revised edition, yeah.
But anyway, so these are major things. Watching the three women, I have to say, it's an urgent thing. It's a human. I was glad to see them. I'm glad to see that they seemed in good health to a degree. But they are speaking to the urgency of saving lives. And the United Nations General Assembly and Canada, to its shame, did Canada abstain or did Canada?
No, Canada voted no.
Canada voted no.
Yeah.
So we're with Netanyahu and Biden.
Yeah.
And it's a death grip.
Yeah.
It's a death cult, I guess. So there needs to be a durable ceasefire and a political resolution. The twist I would put on it from the point of view of Taylor Report is that this is going to have to involve the Russians and the Chinese. Security Council, but the Security Council has to agree. But the two major players have to do the right thing. I'll warn the listeners. We have 3 minutes to go. I mentioned this. I'm going to go back to the point about Qatar. Here's Olmert speaking. In a recent interview with the Deutsche Welle, former Israeli Prime Minister Olmert disclosed inter alia, "We know that the Hamas was financed with the assistance of Israel for years by hundreds of millions of dollars that came from Qatar with the assistance of the State of Israel, with the full knowledge and support of the Israeli government led by Netanyahu." That is the former prime minister of Israel telling us a little history. You won't find that in the Atlantic magazine. In the last 2 minutes here, I'll just mention something is not getting publicity about Qatar. Qatar has sentenced to death 8 former naval officers from India on the charge of spying for Israel. So I guess relations are starting to go sideways amongst all these. But that comes in as a something of a political shock, and I don't see the media here trying to figure it out. I have not seen the evidence, but it's apparently you had a contractor selling material for submarines that were to be bought by Kuwait, subject to be bought by Qatar, and they had Indian naval personnel, retired people who would know about these things, and they say 8 of them were spying for Israel, and they're going to hang them. And the government of India is a little bit flat-footed on this, and because now India is one of the few big countries that is actually saying it's in solidarity with Israel. So when something like that happens out of the blue, you want to say, well, let us make sure you put that in when you're computing all this. put that in the mix. So this is Daily Report winding up. I want to thank Phil for being here and helping out. And coming up is Tracks from Abroad. And we'll see you next week.